Welcome to Business Uncomplicated. I'm your host, Rich Nazaro. And today we're going to have a really great conversation with an executive who I've worked with in the past and talk about a lot of things, AI, leadership, business silos. I think it will be a really interesting conversation. And, you know, as I think about the world of business today, we are struggling to keep up with the technology landscape. AI has supercharged our environment and it is changing so quickly. As soon as you implement something, it's changed. But the reality is 95% of Gen AI projects are really failing to meet their objective. And that was from a recent study done by McKinsey, that there's a lot of experimentation, but there isn't really a result. And IBM did a study that said the average ROI is only 5.9%. So that's not a really big return on investment for the investment and effort from a people perspective that's being put into it. So it's not hard to see why these companies are probably focused on the wrong approach when it comes to AI. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today with our guest, Cindy Chung. Cindy is a seasoned leader who's been at the intersection of technology and business strategy and transformation for decades. She spent two decades helping some of the world's most recognizable organizations rethink how they use technology, how they drive growth and efficiency. At Creative Artist Agency, she served as chief of staff to the CIO, where she steered the technology strategy, guided mergers and acquisitions, and helped build leadership development programs to really strengthen the organization from the inside out. Before that, she managed large-scale technology portfolios at Yahoo, and she spent a significant amount of her career in slalom and Accenture over 13, 14 years in the CRM transformation practice back when SaaS was new and really cutting its teeth on technology. I think what makes Cindy stand out is her ability to bridge the executive vision with the operational execution and blending that strategic planning, leadership development with a deep understanding of how people and technology really must work together. She's going to share her insights today on breaking through the silos, strong team cultures, leadership, the complexities of technology, making technology serve the bigger picture. And we're going to talk through a series of topics. So I'm really excited to have her on the pod today. And I hope you guys enjoy it. Let's go. Welcome, Cindy, to Business Uncomplicated. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I am not bad. Before we jump into an array of topics that we have today, I thought you could give a little introduction to yourself and who you are and why we want to hear from you today.
And yeah, I mean, that's a great question right there. But Cindy Chung and Rich and I have known each other for, like you said the other day, 100 years, 100 years ago. And just a little bit of my professional background is I was in consulting for a really long time. I started my career in consulting first off at Accenture. I was there for about 13 years. And then I moved over into slalom consulting, similar model, but more limited travel. For there, probably about like maybe 3-4 years. And then I actually went to the other side. So I went on the client side. Yeah, I've been in consulting for so long. And so I just wanted to see what is it like on the other side? So I went over to Yahoo and then eventually over to CAA. I would say that most of my career, the consulting side is kind of varied and everything like that too. But I think if I had to say, you know, what I was really into, it was basically that translator, I guess, between business and IT. I definitely will say I'm a more technical person. I come from an engineering background and everything like that too. Totally local UCLA, rah rah, all that stuff. Go Dodgers, all of those things. But yes, I would say that I'm kind of like that connector, you know, between the two. I know technology enough where, you know, the engineers and everything don't think I'm, you know, stupid, for lack of a better word. And then I can hopefully, you know, translate that onto the business side too. And I think, you know, maybe personal note, you know, my parents, right? I don't know if you have this, you know, kind of the same experience previously too, but they're usually not as technical, you know? And so like having them, introducing them to technology has always been one of those things. And I think about that you know, when I talk to folks and, you know, and to be honest too, technology these days just moves so quickly that I actually feel like, you know, one of those people like, yeah, what does this do?
Right. You're a tinkerer.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're going to get into a lot about technology today. And it's funny you say that because my parents were always like, why do you have to get on a plane for your job? Like, I don't understand it.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody the other day and I was in London. It was 1 a.m. and my parents called me. And I was like, did you not hear the funny ring on the phone when you called? And they were like, oh, no, what are you doing in London? I'm like, working. You know, I mean, my dad was a cop. My mom was a educator, so uh-huh. They never left, you know, 10 square miles, you know.
Exactly. So it's just funny, you know. And so we'll see how the careers of the future are going to be too.
Right. Well, we should talk about that. So you've seen, as you went through your resume, you've seen business from different angles, from consulting to being in industry. What do you think is unique about consulting, or what do you like about it, versus what do you think is unique about working in industry, and kind of compare and contrast, what did you like about both of those versions of your career?
Mm-hmm. A great question. I mean, I think on the consulting side, what I really enjoyed about it was the variety. You know, people always say it's the variety. Yeah. Looking at, you know, the same business problem, but at different companies, right? Or similar, I would say similar, you know, business problems, but at the same company. Because, you know, I worked as part of the CRM practice, so customer relationship management. And at the end of the day, you know, at least I can speak on the corporate side, it's all about your customers. I mean, it's like, how do you make money? I don't want to speak on the nonprofit side, because, you know, that is one area that I would, you know, like to get into, you know, because I think maybe everything corporate, it's at the end of the day, it's all about profits, right? How do you make money? Because you have to pay the bills. If anyone can figure out, you know, like how to do that without paying bills, then hey, you know, let me know. but yeah, exactly. But I think, I think on the consulting side, that's what I really enjoyed, is just seeing all of the different companies and see how they ran, operated, and how they approached this, like similar problems, the same problem, because every solution was never the same. There was always nuances and everything like that too. So that's what I really enjoyed about consulting, was having the opportunity to see a lot of different things. And as you know, working at Accenture, larger company, you had a lot of opportunity to do a lot of different things. And I was fortunate enough to work across like utilities and government and high tech and entertainment and all of those things too. So that was like what I, you know, at the end of the day, I actually kind of miss about consulting also. Being on the, so, you know, always made me curious about the other side, because, you know, as a consultant, you're like the client, right?
Right.
What does the client want to do? And now all of a sudden, like, I'm the client. And I think that was the thing. It's you have more sense of an ownership, I guess, is the best way to put it. Is because whatever they suggest, you know, it's up to you to actually implement it and own it, you know, because as a consultant, you know, you kind of believe you might help them through like some initial adoption and everything like that too, but you're not there to support it. You're not there to like feed like whatever is, you know, that you're putting forth on there too. And I think, you know, it kind of depends on how the company that you go to sees consultants as well.
Right.
Some are very consultant friendly, others not so much. They're like, we could do it ourselves.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I mean, that's the reality of the situation. I remember, you know, being at Accenture, to your point, we would leave after that contract ended. And when I, you know, delivered the Dell project at Accenture and then joined Dell, everyone joked because they were like, you now have to own. That's going to be a problem. What is that?
That's my phone. It's my landline. I actually have a landline and I wish I could turn it off.
All right. We're just going to have to stop and re-record that section.
Yeah. It's no, like seriously, never fails when I'm on a call and it's like super important. Phone always rings.
The phone
and it's
line.
Like, yeah. And it's the lamp because it's connected to the Dell buzzer.
Oh, okay. I'm like, why do you still have a landline? I'm actually half tempted to keep this section just to say you have a landline. I'm actually going to leave it. Let's just continue. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things. This is live, right?
This is live.
Yeah.
This is the talking about the future of technology, and you're still connected to a landline.
Because, you know, and we still have a wired headsets, right? I debated on going the wireless headsets.
Well, but I will say that wireless headsets are hit or miss.
Exactly. Exactly. And landlines?
Never miss.
Right? Versus cell phones. Like, can you hear me now? But going back.
It was interesting because then I joined Dell as an employee and they were like, well, now you've got to deal with what you built, right? Yeah. You have to own what you built. And I was like, oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
But sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say too, and I mean, the thing about working for a company too, I mean, you have like your work family, right?
Right.
And in consulting, you had your project team, which was basically like your work family, too. So it was just kind of, you know, a little bit different.
I mean, on some of those projects, I mean, at Dell, I was there 18 months. So, I mean, you work with people 18 months and, you know, these people have become friends. I mean, we work together and we've been friends for 100 years, as we stated at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah.
So we look great, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we should really hold it to ourselves how good we look. So I wanted to talk about a couple of things today and get your thoughts on them. And I want to kind of, there's a method to the madness sometimes, but I want to talk about business silos because I think as we move into this world of AI, I've always been frustrated by this topic. And I think it either gets really good going forward with AI or it's still is a barrier to AI being really good. I want to get your thoughts and feelings on AI itself and the ROI and where you think it's going. I know you've been doing a lot of research on it and we've been working on a project together. And then I kind of want to wrap us up with topics around leadership because I always find leadership topics so insightful and valuable. And you've been in a number of leadership roles and have worked with a number of senior leaders. So I'm always curious about people's take on leadership and how they feel that guides an organization. Because as we've been talking about the different aspects of our careers, you know, consulting, you are kind of on your own. Whereas in an industry job like CA, Yahoo, or when I was at Salesforce or Dell or CA, you had bosses and there was politics and it was a hierarchy. So I want to kind of talk about that as well. So let's jump into kind of business silos. And you talked about at the beginning of the call when you're introducing yourself that you're this translator.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the biggest silos I see often is between business and IT, right? Business thinks IT is too slow, too much bureaucracy. They don't move fast enough. IT is like the business can never define their problem. They can never give us proper requirements. And they just want to build stuff and then leave it to die and go and build the next thing where we have to deal with all the complexities of PPI, data security, regulatory in some instances. If you're Fed compliant, if you sell it to the federal government, there's a whole bunch of regulatories or PPI data, you know, right? Like personal data, you can't just let that out, right? That's opening yourself up for a lawsuit. And so there's always to me this give and take. But these silos that are created often are manufactured and are not really need to be there, but they are. Give me your take and your experience on kind of the silos. And you can take it from two different perspectives, the outside in as a consultant, because we've seen it, or as, you know, your position within the organization.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question because, yeah, silos are everywhere. There's the classic business versus IT. And it's funny, you like versus, right? It's like one or the other. And then, you know, and honestly, like just within an IT organization, or I guess within any, you know, like department, you're going to have silos there as well, right? We had, you know, in the infrastructure team, the security team and the product team. I mean, there was a point where each one wanted to have their own little like engineer, you know, and within there too, because it all came down to how quickly can that person respond? Where do I file in on the priority list, right? On, you know, if you've had like this one, if you had like one person or one team that was like going across everything, it was supposed to support everybody to kind of like limit the silos and everything like that too. That was like one thing, but then it was like, oh, well, I need them right now. you know, kind of it translates to business saying, well, I need IT right now. Like I want it on demand, especially in this day and age. No one has like patience or anything like that either. So I think it's this tension between the two. Honestly, and you know, there, my perspective on this is it all boils down to culture. And what we'll talk about in, you know, later on is the leader, you know, within the leader of the groups. Do they promote a supportive environment? Did they promote a collaborative environment? Do they, you know, do they show that we are all one team working for the same goal, whatever that goal may be? Right. At the agency, it was like, oh, how do you help the agents make more money? Because at the end of the day, it was all about making more money. You hear about all these crazy deals and stuff like that. Right. So it's like it was all about that.
But in most organizations, let's face it, sales rules the roost. Right. I mean, that's no different. But in the world of the silo. Right. If everybody serves the master, which is sales. Right. Sales doesn't know technology, even if they sell it. Right.
Right.
I mean, I worked at Salesforce. That's all they sold was technology. 90% of them couldn't answer a damn question about the software, you know, to the details that some people would want to get into. Right. They knew sometimes enough to be dangerous. And often on the receiving end of that sale, we were like, what did you buy? What did they sell you? I don't think that's what you want. That's not solving that problem, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing because it's always, you know, I feel like it's always been, okay, does IT lead, you know, the change or does business lead the change? And yes, within an organization, you know, if you had to look at the departments, sales is the master. But then if you kind of think about it the other way, who is the ultimate, who should be in the ultimate center? The consumer, right? The consumer, the client, right? And if you, and you know, my perspective again, is if you kind of think about it from the customer perspective, right? That could be, you know, an interesting way to do it. And then, you know, the silo thing, honestly, I see a lot of it comes down to ego and ownership, right? Everybody wants to own their own thing, right? Everyone wants to have their, I don't know, legacy or anything that. The, you know, also my experience has been leaders have very strong personality. And so, you know, even though they may try to be egoless, and don't get me wrong, like a lot of people, you know, definitely work that way. At the end of the day, everybody has an ego and, you know, you gotta manage that. So the silos, it's always been there. I don't know if there's a...
What's your recommendation for breaking the silos? Like how have you done it in the past or how do... You know, in the future, let's say you're in a really siloed environment, how do you help people or encourage the behavior to your point or the culture to break through from that silo?
To see it from the other person's point of view, right? Mm-hmm. Put yourself in that person's shoes and see, okay, how are they seeing these problems? Or, you know, like, Oh my God, I never really thought of it from that way. And it, you know, like having an open mind and just saying, okay, let me put myself in so-and-so's shoes. Like so-and-so's being so difficult, so challenging. Okay, well, let me put myself in their shoes and think, okay, let me think like, you know, Bob, how are, you know, what, why is Bob feeling this way? And really trying to like empathize, you know, with them, seeing from their point of view and that, or, you know, honestly, I've done this before too, believe it or not, you know, intervention, just get the two people in a room together, right? And just mediate, just say, hey, you know, what, when you, like, I'm going to paraphrase because I'm going to steal a quote from one of our old colleagues. When you go home, like, why are you complaining? What do you complain about so much? You know, and then like, is it about this person or, you know, and just, I mean, and again, it just, it comes to this kind of like group, I don't know, a therapy session in a sense, right? Just to talk it out and say, okay, well, tell me how you're feeling. Why do you feel this way? And just if you have that understanding or even how that person's job works, right? Like,
Do you think shared goals or shared metrics drive the right behavior in that situation?
That's an interesting question because do I believe that shared metrics help collaboration and coordination? Yes, because the success of both teams or, you know, multiple teams are all based on this one shared metric, right?
Right.
Do the shared metrics help drive behavior? If you're looking to drive collaborative behavior, yes, I do think they do help. But I think you need to be careful about the metrics that you set, because you can promote different, you know, not undesired, unexpected behaviors based on, you know, the metrics, because this is something I've also seen. I don't know if it's just part of being a person or what, but everyone's trying to like game it, right? And so, so all of these things boils down to, you know, just us being people.
Right.
And how do you manage that? How do you navigate that?
I think you said it best. It's leave the ego at the door, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have worked in many environments where the ego is just so bad. You're just like, dude, I can't even reason with you, because you're just so ate up with yourself. And then you had those really good, which I call, everybody would call servant leaders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really understand the mission and understand what they're intended to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, because as we talk about silos and we look at, you know, siloed behavior, a lot has to do in my mind with the technology. And the reason I say that is because a lot of times, if you think about historically, IT has kind of been back office.
Mm-hmm.
Then we fast forward to like in the early 2000s, when SaaS became the new thing and Salesforce hit the market. And I was talking about this with somebody the other day. Salesforce sold to the business. They did everything in their power not to sell to IT, because everyone's like, well, IT is just going to slow us down. IT is just going to slow us down. Eventually, they had to get to IT, because as they moved into the enterprise, they had to get to data sources and protected systems for ingestion that were locked down from the business. They were admin controlled, and those admin controls were not going to be given up for very good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're moving into AI, which gives pretty much anybody, if you want to take the most basic version of it, right? Eric Schmidt from Google was just talking the other day, and he goes, so I'm just going to dumb down AI and say, it's ChatGPT. But AI is not ChatGPT, right? But he's like, when I say AI is going to take over the world, he's like, I'm not being dramatic, but for the purposes of this conversation, I'll use ChatGPT, which I think is funny, because I think most people associate AI with ChatGPT.
Great.
But if we start thinking about in the last 6 to 9 months, it's just taken off, right? But there's a lot of studies now coming out that says, hey, McKinsey just did a study. 95% of it is just experimentation. It's just play. You're not really seeing the IBM had, I think it's 6% ROI people are actually getting from AI. So when I think of the silos, right, and now I think of this idea of democratizing IT through technology, because AI is now kind of available to anybody, right? I don't need IT to go to ChatGPT. I don't need it to go to Claude or Perplexity, some of these big LLMs. Of course, there are tons of security concerns because people are just throwing company data out into the ether, right? It's like posting it and showing up in a Google search, right? So we won't get into all the legalities of that. But how as we move into AI, and it's so rapidly changing, how do you think that helps this conversation around silos or hurts it?
Oh, God, I don't even know. Yeah, I think can do both, right? I think that, you know, something that you were saying before about the silos and everything like that, too. I mean, everybody wants to kind of have their own way of doing things, because not and have the least amount of dependencies, right? Because that's how you get stuff done the quickest, is when you can do it yourself, do it your way, and you know it's going to work and everything like that. Once you start having these dependencies and everything like that, too, that's when things kind of get, that's when the silos need to come down. AI, you know, I think AI at the end of the day will definitely help, you know, remove those silos, because it may uncover where you do need to have other data sources, let's say, right? Like let's just take the AI models, like the ChatGPT. Like, what's the power of it, right? The power of it is to take all the data, process all of the data, and then come up with an answer, to a question. I think that's probably the most simplistic way, or in my mind, to kind of think about it, right? And then so the wider your questions are, the more questions you ask, the more complicated questions you have, you're going to need more robust data sets around that too. And so I think AI will help uncover some of those data gaps that you need to fill in order to come up with a good answer. I don't want to say correct, but a good answer.
Well, and that's a good point, because that leads to a whole host of what I think has been around for a long time. I mean, back in the late 2000s, it was big data. Mm-hmm. Remember, everything was big data. Oh, you got to do big data. In fact, a really good friend was on the cover of CIO magazine as big data. Uh-huh. He worked for Dell, and he was responsible for the data store. Right? And Dell had petabytes and petabytes of data back then. And so it's interesting, because I don't think companies have ever nailed data quality or content quality. And it's now probably the number one point of failure for AI. Mm-hmm. Because to your point is, it will answer your question. Whether that answer is completely true, it's really dependent on the breadth and depth of the data and the accuracy of that data, right?
Right. That's, you talk about hallucinations and everything like that, or even bias, right? They were talking about how bias, and, you know, there's a whole, you know, unconscious bias and everything like that too. Right. And so you've kind of got to be pure about how you train, you know, your models and everything. But to, you know, at the end of the day, humans right now are training models. And so humans are going to inherently have something in there. I don't know if that's ever, you know.
Well, 100%. Meta just hired their anti-woke liaison, right? So take the woke out of AI. Not what, sure what woke AI is.
Exactly. But, like, right? I don't know what woke is anymore. I don't even know if I ever really knew what woke was before. I'm just not that cool.
You're not.
Yeah. Why? But yeah, and then I think AI could, you know, just going kind of back, you know, AI could hurt also, you know, depending on how you use it. I think at the, you know, AI's there. It's not going away. I think that's one of the things. It's not going away. It's here to stay. We need to accept the fact that it's not a fad. Right. It's not a fad. Like, I mean, NFTs, I don't even know if that was really, you know, but I feel like that was kind of a fad.
Right.
But this is here to stay. It's going to stay. It's going to evolve. It's going to be how we use it going forward. I think that's going to be the interesting piece, and, you know, regulations of it also. I mean, we've seen it before, like when the internet, you know, came out. I mean, I remember internet. Wow. Okay. You know, like an email, like that was like,
right.
I was really coming aware of it like in the early 90s and stuff like that too. And it's just like, oh, wow. What do you mean? You don't have to like send a letter anymore. And, you know, but it did take a while to figure out like how to use the internet, you know?
Yeah. There's a place either in Finland or maybe it's Denmark. One of these places, they stop letter carrying. They're like stopping mail. Like, we don't see the point anymore. No. I don't know why we have this system, because nobody needs it.
Yeah.
If you were to consult with a company about AI today, given it's weird because I would say it's in its infancy, but I feel like it's one of those sci-fi movies where, you know, the baby is born and then 2 weeks later, it's a full adult. I kind of feel like that's the world we're living in. It's like between ChatGPT 4.5 and 5.0, it's like dramatically different in a matter of months. And this whole agent-to-agent architecture is just rapidly becoming so much easier to design and build. So if you were to set foot in a company and say, hey, Cindy, please come and guide us on our AI journey, what do you think that journey looks like in your mind for companies, and why do you think, as you explain the journey, it's important to do it that way?
I think what's important about AI is what is their point of view on how AI can work with them. Why are they adopting AI? You know, like I was saying, AI is not going away. You do need to figure out how to work what how to incorporate it, you know, into your life, I guess. But I think I want them to understand, like, what are we looking AI to do? Are we looking for it to enhance our workers' lives? Are we looking to streamline workflow? Are we looking to gain productivity? What is, you know, we've talked about it before, what is the business problem that they're looking to solve? And I think that's true with any technology and AI too. And I think about the AI too, it's like, what's your point of view? Do you see AI as headcount reduction, right? Or productivity enhancer, right? Do you see AI as everyone's personal assistant? Do you see AI? Like, how do you see that?
Well, and it's interesting because people would say, oh, AI is a job killer. And I think to some extent it is. And the reason I say that is if I'm able to maximize my profits, which you started the conversation with talking about, right? That's what companies are after. The most expensive thing on a company payroll is people.
Mm-hmm.
That is payroll people. Brilliant statement. That one is, you know.
So insightful. Yeah,
so insightful, I know. This is what this podcast is about, those insights. You know, those little nuggets you can take away. But so if I created a digital workforce, what's to stop me from reducing my staff? And then where do people go? Because somebody told me, well, didn't tell me, but I was listening to it the other day that, you know, the computation power of AI is going to surpass the top mathematicians.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't need a mathematician, I don't need a coder. You know, Facebook, Google, all these people, like, all the code's going to be written by AI. So I don't need coders. So let's see, math degrees become obsolete. IT, MIS degrees become obsolete. Where does that leave us? What do you think?
I mean, being cheeky, it leads me to want to get a job where it's more manual labor, because that's not going to go away by AI. I mean, you
so Cindy's digging ditches.
Exactly, right? Which, I mean, that's why I'm going into real estate, right? But no, it's interesting because I think there's a couple different ways to look at it. Yes, do I think certain jobs will be impacted? Absolutely. But then if you think about it too, and it's I don't think I'm saying anything new or insightful, but it turns into workforce, in my mind, workforce evolution, right? Mm. Every job will now have some sort of AI component to it, right? Because there's a lot of things, you know, that we do that are kind of mundane. No one wants to do it because it's boring, right? I mean, those are some of the things that you kind of like outsource or something like that. Or like, I don't want to do it, so let me outsource that, right? You know,
right.
Cleaning data, you know, whatever that might be. It's kind of, there's some rules and, you know, everything like that. I think those things, maybe those are like the low-hanging fruit that people talk about. But that's kind of the easy thing that I feel like AI, right? And, you know, could help automate or speed up, which would increase my productivity and then have me focus on more. And it's funny, they high value activities, whatever that means, right?
Well, and it's funny because you say that and you said earlier, hey, you know, everybody has this personal assistant, and I've heard this before. And kind of going back to the silos and the goals and outcomes of a business, like, I see it as tiers. Like, yes, there's a need for, and a buddy of mine, Jay Desai, wrote on LinkedIn the other day, he goes, you know, in the world of AI, everybody has a chief of staff, right? That was usually reserved for the upper echelon, right? The C-level people, the SVPs, they all get chiefs of staff, right? Who extended their workload, right? They were able to take work off them so they could do the value-added activities, right? And these chiefs of staff and assistants were doing all the manual stuff, right? Booking calendar appointments, travel, you know, setting up the meetings, coordinating decks, all that stuff, right? So now everyone has an assistant and all that's done for them through this. To me, and this is kind of where the IBM quote comes in around ROI, it's 6%. Because just because I'm doing my job more efficiently and you're doing your job more efficiently doesn't mean we're adding more value or revenue to the company. And so from the silo perspective, sure, to me, that is the bottom layer of AI, right? The most fundamental use case anybody can get around and you can use. To me, the more interesting part is then how do I take it's human in the loop, human out of the loop, right? How do I take humans out of the loop? And then to your point, value-added activities. So let's just pick on sales because we love to. And and they're the money makers, right? They carry the purse strings there. So they go and, we were talking about this the other day. They go and have a meeting. It's recorded. The recording analyzes, AI analyzes the recording. It says, you talked about creating an opportunity. Do you want to create an opportunity? Yes, I do. It goes and creates the opportunity for them. That's a huge saving for sales. Like humongous, right? Sales hates logging into tools. They hate, adoption of CRM systems are traditionally horrible because of this, because sales wants to be out selling. They don't want to be out. They don't want to be inputting. And it's always been this, well, you got to input it. If we need to know our pipeline, we don't know how well you're doing. Like it's always been this circular argument. Okay. So as that gets better, then do you believe that there's more scrutiny on leaders? And when we get to leadership, we can talk a little bit more about this. To evaluate now people differently. So could you have skated by as a decent salesperson in the past? Now that AI is doing 90% of your manual activities, you really have to be a good salesperson, right?
I mean, yes.
Do you think that's where it's going?
You know, that's an interesting, I didn't really think about it from, from the leadership perspective as well, right? And because I think the way that I was taking it is you're kind of alluding to coaching, right? Coaching, how do you coach, your sales folks to, what's the next level? I guess what's the next bar, right? So it's like, you're just kind of skating by, right? Well, what's that level up bar, right? So how is that leader going to define that level up bar? Is it completely just based on numbers? Is it on, longevity of the relationship? I mean, what is that next step going to be? But I mean, I think it's one way of kind of looking at it too. And then it just kind of made me think about what is it about a person that makes them a good salesperson, right? Because I feel like, we've always talked about this before. Sales can sell. Like if you're a good salesperson, you can sell anything. And you don't really need a tool, but like, what is it about that person that makes
them? The art versus the science, right?
Exactly.
The tool being more the science, art being more the being able to engage in that conversation.
Know what they need or
persuasive behavior, right?
Be able to sell them something that make them think they need it.
Right. Sell ice to an Eskimo, right?
Exactly. So I think it's maybe more of those intangibles. And I think, AI is going to be interesting in that way, too, because if you, deployed the AI agents and said, hey, sales guy, use AI to help you do your job better, it'd be interesting to see what is now perceived as like an A player using AI versus a B player using AI.
And this goes back to the silo. So if I'm allowed, so most salespeople run on a sales process, right? Like there's tons of sales processes out there, right? And in Salesforce, if you know CRM, then your opportunity goes through a life cycle, right? Everything's a life cycle, opportunity being one part of that life cycle. And so you have to go through those stages, right? So I think this is where it gets into your discussion around the art versus the science, because if everybody creates their own personal assistant, then I'm going to potentially tell my personal assistant how I like to sell. So you do. And this is where I get into the silos and to how you either democratize IT to the point where anybody can do it, right? Because it becomes so easy. And I don't mean anybody can do it because anybody can be a coder. I mean, anybody can do it because it's literally plug and play versus partnering with IT and having that discussion that says the sales process is how we're going to measure results and how we're going to do it. I need you to create that AI experience that allows me to allow my sellers to do the art and have the AI do the science behind the scenes. And I don't think you can trust that in a democratized environment to just everybody. I think that still requires the thought leadership of a technical IT department where some people may not believe that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I heard, you know, it just reminded me of something that I heard on a webcast the other day too. We kind of treat AI as like, and maybe any person, right? Like as a child, because, right? They need to know, like, what are my boundaries, right? You know,
right.
you get to a point where the kid's like, you know, testing their boundaries, right? And so you do need to, as a parent, right? You do need to corral those behaviors and show them that what the limitations are, whatever they are. So maybe, you know, you kind of see AI as the same way. Now, I'm not saying that I tease the parent of the business. I think it's this, you know, to coin a word, like co-parenting, right? Like, let's go through this process together and see how AI can help. And you know, something you were saying before, you know, salespeople, they just want to sell, right? They don't want to do, they don't want to have any friction or anything like that. But, you know, from a business standpoint, you know, you do need to do the tracking. Finance, you know, needs to know how much revenue is even coming in so I can actually like plan around it too. And if you're sandbagging, you know, if I can't trust these numbers that the salespeople are giving me, like, what good are my financial forecasts for the company? You know, so it's kind of like that circular loop that, you know, people may or may not appreciate and everything like that too. You putting AI in the middle to kind of, you know, do that translation for that, whatever that may, it kind of reminds me of this other leader that we had. And, you know, he never, or, you know, read his emails, did anything like that, or, you know, but he was one of the, you know, one of the top leaders. What he did do was he had a dictation device. So all he did was dictate, you know, and said this, that, the other, you know, whatever it was. And it was like stream of consciousness. Then his assistants would take those recordings and then, you know, do whatever they needed to do, you know, around it too. So if you kind of think about those team of assistants, you think of like, you know, the salespeople as at the dictation and then translating into, you know, whatever, if AI could do that, I think that might be a really interesting play, you know, for these things too.
Yeah. So it brings up the leadership conversation, right? And how leaders are reacting to this new world. And I've seen a lot of different reactions. Some people think, well, let's just let everybody do what they want to do. Let everybody solve their own problems, guys. Like, they just give them custom GPTs and let them build and build and build. I think that experiment's a little flawed.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are solving random problems that don't make any sense, as we've talked about. But, you know, we've kind of touched upon leadership throughout this call. And I find it a fascinating topic because I think we both have worked for really great leaders and really bad leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, leadership in my mind is a make or break. And I find it interesting as we talk about this world of like replacing the worker. I was thinking, well, if the AI can tell me my position and do all that, why do I need the leader? Right. If the worker can set the vision and can go sell and make the money and the AI can tell you you're making money or you're not making money, then do I really need a CMO, a CFO, a CEO, a CPO, a CDO, you know, go down the whole list of the C-level executives and their SVPs and their VPs. And so from a leadership perspective in AI, what are your thoughts around where you think leaders need to kind of guide this vision? And then where do you think the role of a leader comes in eventually?
Yeah, so I think it kind of goes back to what's their point of view about AI. And how does that align across the C-level suite? So again, it's kind of, you know, figuring out like what is that North Star for that company? And as a leader, whatever that common goal is around AI, being very thoughtful about how that's communicated throughout the organization. That's in the context of how do I want the company to benefit from the use of AI. It's just kind of funny you say, you know, let everybody, you know, and I don't think that there's a right answer for everybody, for every company, right? As you know, in consulting, same problem, multiple answers, and it could be vastly different, even how you, you know, organize your team, you know?
Yeah.
there's, you know, there's the whole embedded IT within the business, or there's the embedded business within IT. I mean, there's a lot of different flavors, you know, to that too. But I think the point of the leader, assuming that AI doesn't take over those leadership positions, it is a matter of setting, you know, again, the classic setting the tone, and then just making sure everybody understands, you know, what it is. And, you know, to be fair, I don't think everybody needs to be bought into it, right? But they all need to agree to move forward. It's kind of like that whole agree to disagree, but hey, we're gonna make a decision and we're gonna go forward, you know, with that too.
What do you think, because I've often struggled with this, what do you think the role is of leadership's setting the vision and letting people execute it versus setting the vision and validating? I find a lot of leaders will say, oh, here's what I want. Okay. And then people go do it and they're like, well, that's not what I wanted at all. You're like, okay, but this is what you said. Well, that's not what I meant. Okay, but that's what we interpreted it to be. Well, you should have asked questions. So like, I always have like in this AI world where we're saying, what problem are you solving? You know, why are we doing what we're doing? How much vision or strategy do you think is incumbent to the leaders to help direct this kind of, you know, new wild, wild west of technology where at anybody's fingertips, they could answer any question potentially possible?
Right. God, that's such an interesting question, because I struggle with that as well, too, because priorities change all the time, you know, like strategy, like, because what is strategy? What is it? Is it just like a, you know, a fun word to say, you know, are you or to make yourself sound smart, right? Versus like
strategery.
Yeah, strategery, you know, versus the whole tactical pieces, because tactical seems to be boring, but you need to do the tactical in order to achieve the strategic is my perspective too. You know, I think what I've seen work, or I guess the way that I like to work, is in a collaborative, you know, environment to say, hey, let's get people together, and not just like the top level, like let's get everybody, you know, together, you know, certain people and, you know, at all levels, and just say, hey, you know, like let's get all the information that we can, their perspectives, because I do think that everybody's perspective is important, right? Because there's a lot of things that you might not know because you just don't do it, right? And so yeah. And so getting that, but I think the job of the leader, or the role of the leader, is to take all that information and then use that to set whatever the direction, the vision is going to be.
Yeah. It was interesting. I was listening to a podcast today. I listened to a bunch of them, but today I was on Smartless, and James Gunn, who the DC, he did Superman, and he did, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy. And he was talking about how he's running DC and how Disney had bought DC, and then they had to feed this beast called Disney Plus, and, you know, all this content needed to come out. And his take was that the script is the most important part of the movie. Uh-huh. And without the script, you really can't do it. But what a lot of studios would do is like half the script would be written, and then they green, you know, the project gets moving. And they set a date for release. And then the writer's rushing to do the script. And he's like, I'm doing a flip here at DC, because he runs the DC comic universe now for film. And he goes, the script gets done, then we set the date. And I loved that thinking from a business perspective, because he understands the success of the film, which, although creatively, a lot of times people want the creative piece, there's still the financial success of the film, right? Which means a lot, obviously, box office success. But I loved the fact that he said that you can't have the success without the foundation, and the script is the foundation. And I kind of feel like we do that a lot in business. We buy a tool, somebody decides to look at a tool, oh, we've got this problem, and this tool can solve that problem. So we bought this tool, now implement it. Okay, but you didn't really ever define the problem. Are we solving all these things? Because we have six other tools that do the same thing. So why weren't we talking about the problem and fixing the problem, then looking for the tool? And I feel like AI has a real shot at just doing that wrong thing. Well, we just do it with the AI. Just do it with the AI. You don't have to worry about solving. Tell the AI the problem. They'll tell you how to solve it. And it's like, are we going to lose? And I think MIT or somebody, people are losing critical thinking skills to AI. And I think that's a problem. I don't know if you have a thought on that.
Now, something that you said before, too, and it's kind of related, but it's the foundation, right?
Right.
Like going back to my contractor hat, right? You need to build a solid foundation because if you build a crappy foundation, anything you build on top of it's going to just fall apart, right? And I feel like the same thing is for these tools like AI. We've always talked about how critical is, like, if the AI is going to be trusted, then
right.
the data that it's drawing upon to create these answers needs to be
right.
good, right?
right?
Or valid. And so, yeah, like, how is your foundation? Is your foundation solid enough to build on top of as well? To the other point, are your business processes solid?
Right.
To build on top of?
Right.
Are your workflows solid to build on top of? Or are they kind of like strung together, you know, with like a piece of duct tape and some cheese,
right.
you know, or whatever, right. right? So I think that's the interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the future is AI enabled. I think we'll all agree on that.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the foundation is required for success. So I appreciate you talking to us today.
Oh, no, thank you. I feel like...
And I know we'll be talking more.
Yes, I feel like we could talk for another hour.
For another hour, yeah. Whether people want to listen to us for another hour, we'll see the high ratings. I mean, this will probably be like the New Heights podcast. We'll probably be like Travis and...
Are you going to propose?
I might, yeah. I mean, I know. Shocking, you know, they're finally engaged. I mean...
Yeah.
Somebody, yeah. I read the comments of that, and somebody goes, "That breakup song is going to be huge." And I was like, "That is so
way
bad.
To go, man.
Right?
Way to go."
You knew somebody was going to say that. All right, I'm going to let you go. We're going to talk soon, and
yes,
I appreciate all your advice.
Yeah, right. No, thank you. It was fun.
All right, thanks. Bye.